Lord, the nectar of your words and the descriptions of your activities are the life and soul of those who are always aggrieved in the material world. These narrations are transmitted by exalted personalities, and they eradicate all sinful reactions. Whoever hears these narrations attains all good fortune. These narrations are broadcast all over the world and are filled with spiritual power. Those who spread the message of Godhead are certainly the most munificent welfare workers.
Om Gyan Tivinandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Vina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamaiham Tadhati Shapalantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Shagrajatam Shahagana Raganatam Vitam Stam Sadivam Sadvaitam Shabhututam Pradishana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Shahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karana Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kamshana Govangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vamsha Kolpataru Bhyascha Kapasanto Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Tavakatamritam Taktitivanam Kavipir, Iritam, Kalmashapa, Shravana Mangalam, Srimadatatam, Bhuvi Granantiye, Bhurida Janaha. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has confirmed, and Srila Rupa Goswami confirms, that the devotional service, that spreading devotional service to Krishna is the highest welfare activity. Generally, people are interested in their own welfare in selfish life, and they have extended selfishness in the form of family welfare. A man is working very hard for his family, because the family provides an extended network for his sense gratification. Or sometimes someone works for his community, or someone works for some subset of humanity, some national group, some racial group, some occupational group, workers, or whatever it may be. Or sometimes someone wants to do welfare for humanity at large. Or some people, they want to do welfare work for animals. In the United Kingdom, I attended some program, and I was surprised there are people who are just completely dedicated to cats and dogs. Their hearts just melt when they think about how badly the cats and dogs are treated, how they sometimes die. Anyway, there are those who they extend their love in that way toward the cats and dogs. But generally, a person is regarded as a great welfare worker if he does something for the poor, if he provides clothing, food, medical attention, social upliftment. Then he's considered a great philanthropic person or a great saintly person. There are people who are practically regarded as saints because they dedicate themselves to giving this kind of help to their fellow human beings. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that this kind of welfare work is, practically speaking, insignificant or even harmful. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had one word that means harm-giving kindness. Harm-giving kindness. Prabhupada explained it by an example that there was some boy who had typhoid, and the doctor ordered that this boy has to fast. He can't eat. Don't take pictures, please. Don't take pictures, please. Do not take pictures, please. Three times. Because obviously if you're taking pictures, you're not listening. So the boy was told, the parents were told this boy has to fast. And the parents went out and left the boy in the care of his brother. And the sick boy begged his brother, "I'm so hungry. Won't you just give me a little cake?" So the elder brother or the other brother thought, "Well, sure, you know, kid's hungry." So he gave him a little cake, and the boy nearly died because typhoid, serious business. And then the parents came home and saw what had happened, and they beat the brother like anything. And how could you do this? Give him this food. So sometimes our benevolent activities cause harm to others. We give money to a drunkard and he spends it for liquor. Or many, even in our best welfare activities. I'll give you another example. I was traveling on a train, and in the same compartment there was a lady who was a professor at a university. This was in India. And she was just coming back from a place, and I believe it was Maharashtra at the time, where there had been a terrible earthquake. And the villages were devastated, people's homes were flattened, and the central government had allocated some large sum of money for the relief of the suffering people. So this professor had gone there to see what had happened. And she started telling me that the central government had given the money to the state government. The state government had given it to the district. And from the district, it went down to the leaders of the villages and towns. So I was already ahead of her. I figured out the story. It means that the guys at the central government took so much, then the guys in the district took so much, then the guys at the village level took so much, and then the guys at the bottom got nothing. She said, "No. It was miraculous. Every one of those people got the money in their hand. It would be a miracle anywhere, but especially in India, this is practically something mystical. They all got the money in their hand."
then what happens? These people are there with their flattened homes and no anything, and but now they have money in their hand. What happened? The liquor dealers came. The liquor dealers moved in and they got all the money. The government gave everyone money for relief, so they went to the liquor dealers and got some relief. So their government is trying to do something for the welfare of the people, but they don't know how to do actual welfare work, what the actual welfare work is, what the actual problem is. They're giving symptomatic relief. There's an expression or a common form of treatment in the medical world. When you don't actually know what the disease is, then you say treatment is symptomatic. That means you treat the symptoms. Because you can't treat the disease. You don't know what the disease is, and even if you did know what the disease is, maybe you do know what it is, but there's nothing that will treat that disease. So treatment is symptomatic. You try to make him feel better. You do something to try to make the symptoms less. Treatment is symptomatic. It means the disease is not treated, only superficially the symptoms. Well, this is the disease. But we don't know what the actual disease is. The actual disease is forgetfulness of Krishna. And from that disease, every symptom comes. Every kind of financial problem, every social problem, every psychological problem, every medical problem, every personal problem, every international problem, political problem, whatever problem it is, all the problems come from this. And especially four problems, birth, death, disease, and old age. These four and everything else that comes with it, or analyzed a different way, adiatmic miseries, adibhautic miseries, adidaivic miseries, they all come from this problem. And what are we doing about this problem? We're not doing anything. We're treating the symptoms. We're giving medical attention. Prabhupada compared that to blowing on a boil. If someone has a boil, you blow on it and make it feel better. Or maybe your mother used to say, oh, that's all right, I'll kiss it and make it better. So that's the material treatment. Kiss it and make it better. Just some superficial treatment. So someone is hungry, you give him some food. And then he breaks his leg. So you send him to a hospital. And then he has a psychological problem. So you send him to a psychiatrist. And then he gets run over by a truck. You can't do anything about the problems of material existence by superficial treatment. Because it's nature's arrangement. It's nature's arrangement that a certain amount of difficulty must come. And Prahlad Maharaj gives the evidence that no one wants suffering. But suffering comes. Happiness, everyone wants, and it doesn't come. Or it comes, but it comes as it likes. Someone without any effort gets money or gets something what he likes. And someone else is working, and he can't get it. And distress is the same way. Someone who apparently doesn't deserve it gets it by the truckload. Someone else who really deserves to get it gets off scot-free, it seems. Just a little, you know, nothing. It means the world is unfair. Big problem for theologians. The world is unfair. But we understand from Vedic knowledge that everyone, according to his previous activities, is getting a certain amount of happiness and a certain amount of distress. And you can't change that by any amount of political effort, social effort, philanthropic effort, humanitarian effort, peace effort, war effort. Nothing will change that. These are the forces of destiny. And from another point of view, the person who's suffering
is being purified. He's being purified. He deserves to suffer. We're sorry to say it. You know, people say, oh, you have no sympathy. But that's the fact. And you try to alleviate the suffering, you don't improve, you don't help the situation. You don't help the situation. Well, the actual welfare work, therefore, is Krishna consciousness. Because it goes right to the root of the miseries. What is that? Tapatrayo namulanam. In Srimad Bhagavatam. Tapatrayo namulanam. It uproots the threefold miseries. Other kinds of effort may cut down the threefold miseries, but they grow up again. But unmulanam, by the root, of our every problem is our forgetfulness of Krishna. And that forgetfulness is uprooted by Krishna Katamrita. Amrita means nectar, and Amrita means that substance by which one becomes free from death. Amritu, where there's no death. We're doing something for someone's welfare, but that person has to die. What are you going to do about it? That's the actual problem. But that we can't do anything about, so we make ourselves busy seeing that he goes to a nice kindergarten or whatever it is that we're doing. But the actual problem is death. And because we don't know how to solve it, we say, well, nothing can be done about that. But something can be done about that. One can become free. Actually, one is free from death. Because the Najayate Mriyate Va, for the soul there is no death, and no birth also. But we identify with this material body, and therefore we undergo birth and death. But if that misidentification can be washed away, if that false connection can be disconnected, then one comes to his natural position, mukta sangasya jayate. I'm not this body, I have no connection with the material nature. Of course, the Maya bodies also have this conception that we're not this body, that we're spirit and soul. But they're missing on the actual nectar. They have nectar. Amritu, I'm no birth, no death, I'm spirit soul. But they're actually missing out on the real nectar of life, which is available when there's variety, or which is available when there's a personal connection with Krishna. It's not just variety, but variety in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Suridam Sarvabhutana, the best friend of every living being, most intimate friend of every living being is Krishna. And when we bring the living being in relationship to Krishna, then we become his best friend. And Krishna is his best friend, but the person who brings the living being to Krishna, he becomes the best friend also. And Prabhupada gives another example. That you see, suppose you go to some rich man's house and you meet the man, you meet his wife, you meet his son, you meet his daughter, and so on. You're in this big mansion, and then you go away, and sometime later you're driving in your car in the street, and some beggar comes up to you, you know, hanging on your window. And you look and you see, that's the son of this man. I recognize that, but he's the son of this man, and now he's all. So then, what do you do? He's begging, please give me something. So if you roll down your car window and give him, you know, 100 euros, Are you a great philanthropist? Or maybe 500 euros? 1,000 euros? Oh, poor boy. If you're actually little intelligent and sympathetic, then you open your car door and you say, "Get in here, I know who you are." And you drive off to his father's house and you say, "Here's the boy. He was wandering in the street." Huh? Then every problem is solved. He's the son of a rich man. The father must be so concerned for him. So when he goes back to his home, everything will be taken care of. If you give him 100 euros or 1,000 euros with which to wander around the street, what good have you done for him? Oh, he was hungry. I gave him some food. What have you done? Nonsense. So Prabhupada, therefore, was revolutionary in that he didn't have sympathy for this humanitarian and welfare work. Very nice. In the absence of everything else, Prabhupada said, we're in a place where there are no trees. A castor oil plant is a big tree. So in the absence of everything else, yes, then your humanitarian and philanthropic work is very nice. But this is not the actual welfare work for the living being. The actual welfare work, the great need, is the Krishna consciousness movement. Samsara dava nalila loka. We say this world is burning up in a forest fire. So if you sprinkle a little, you know, like we have the water that we sprinkle in after the RT, you sprinkle a little of that. What are you doing? It requires flood of water to put out a forest fire. And they're putting a little drops of welfare work here and there. What will it do? So the mercy of Krishna has to be distributed. Tapta jivana. Tapta means fried. Tapta means burnt out. The materialists, or the persons suffering in the material world, are being burnt by the heat of material miseries. There are so many ways. Psychologically, financially, politically, physically, they're just being burnt by the material energy. And therefore, nectar has to be supplied. This nectar is supposed to be very cooling. It's like the moon. The moon is said to be full of nectar. So the nectar is very cooling. And for those who are burnt by the material energy, this is the actual cooling nectar. Tavakatamrita, the Krishna Katha. Just some talk? Yes. This transcendental sound will be the needful. Tavakatamrita. Tapta jivanam and kavibir iritam. The bhavoshida shrotam anobhirama. The medicine for the material disease is administered by the great saintly persons. Just like Sukadev Goswami, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the message that they give can liberate the whole world, and more than liberation. For the devotees, liberation is a small thing, or even a nasty thing, a repellent thing. They don't want liberation. I don't want liberation, I want to serve. And those impersonalists are so much above the materialists. Therefore, in the Bhagavatam it said that the materialists are pitiable by the pitiable. The materialists are pitied by the great self-realized saintly persons who know the difference between matter and spirit. But those great saintly persons who know the difference between matter and spirit, but are not getting the taste of devotional service to Krishna, are pitied by the great devotees. So So the Tavakatamrita, Krishna Katha, is Shravana Mangala. Just to hear it is all auspicious. Srivadatatam, it's spreading all power, all opulence, all beauty. Yad yad vibhutimat sattvam srimad vibhutamegava tattareva vagachatam mama tejam sasambhava. Everybody wants some power, some beauty, some wealth, some knowledge, some something, some taste. And whatever there is, the total power, beauty, wealth, knowledge of this material world is just coming from a little spark of Krishna's energy. So if the living being comes in touch with Krishna, then what is he missing? If he comes in touch with Krishna, the absolute whole, what is he missing? He's not missing anything. He has everything. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. And if one has everything in this material world and he's missing Krishna, then he's missing everything. Because Vasudeva Sarvamiti. If you're missing Krishna, you're missing everything. And if you have Krishna, you have everything. So the great saintly persons or the great devotees may appear to be penniless, they may appear to be without opulence, without assets, but they have everything because they have Krishna. And they can give Krishna. They can give Krishna. What is that? Krishna se tomar to Krishna dite para tomara shakite ache. Krishna belongs to his devotees. And the devotees can distribute Krishna. And by distributing Krishna, one gets more of Krishna. Of Krishna, there's no more or less. But Krishna is pleased with the devotees who distribute his mercy to others. Achatasman manusheshu kashchan me priyakam. Krishna becomes more pleased, more indebted. This person is not stingy, kripana, that I'll get Krishna and keep him for myself. But if I can get Krishna and distribute Krishna's mercy to others, this is the mood. The gopis are singing this verse. This is their mood. Not to monopolize Krishna. But I'll take Krishna and enjoy Krishna's association. But to distribute the association of Krishna. Or to please Krishna. Now how much will I please Krishna? By my service, how much pleasure will I give to Krishna? But if others also help, how much service can we do? Individually, my service will come to how much? Huh? But when there's more servants and more servants, and they're also engaged, then Krishna's pleasure will increase. Just like Krishna, he doesn't want one wife. He wants at least 16,000 wives. What is one wife? That's for this material world. At least there should be 16,000. What did they say? The more the merrier. So, Sankirtan means Anandam Buddhi Bhajana. That Krishna gets more pleasure when there are more devotees rendering service. Krishna gets more pleasure when there are more devotees rendering service. And therefore the devotees also get more pleasure when there are more devotees. It's not just that in the material world, when you have more people, you have more enjoyment. But it's spiritual, because Krishna is being pleased and his pleasure is increasing. Our pleasure actually increases. In the material world, it's an illusion. Oh, there's so many of us. But there, your so many will all be cut down. Your big party, your big nation, your big whatever it is, all those people will be finished. And whatever they're doing will be finished. That's material history. But spiritually, if we increase the glorification of Krishna, if we bring people closer to Krishna, then that coming closer to Krishna is eternal. Even if the person doesn't serve Krishna for his whole life, someplace it gets interrupted, still, what is that? In Bhagavad Gita? Svapamapyasya dharmasya, what's the Nehavi Kamanashosti Pratyubai? Even that little bit, if he turned the doorknob for Krishna, that's his eternal credit. He came that much closer. It can't be lost, it will increase. And if it's, he does more than just turn a doorknob, if he does so much service, that's his permanent asset. And if he's still more fortunate in this life, he finishes his business and goes back to God. And if we bring someone to Krishna, or if we engage someone in the service of Krishna, then Krishna becomes more pleased with us also. We make more progress. Krishna becomes pleased, the other people become pleased, we become pleased. Therefore, Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure, and the devotee engaged in the service of Krishna is engaged in increasing. Although that reservoir is absolute, the absolute increases, and the devotee engaged in the Sankirtan movement is increasing the pleasure of Krishna and increasing the pleasure of the world. And it is, therefore, his own pleasure is automatically increasing. The materialist is trying to increase his pleasure, but he's actually increasing his misery. And the devotee is trying to give pleasure to Krishna and give Krishna the reservoir of pleasure to others. Therefore, the greatest pleasure is devotional service. And Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. Hare Krishna.
My Lord, the nectar of your words and the descriptions of your activities are the life and soul of those who are always aggrieved in this material world. These narrations are transmitted by exalted personalities, and they eradicate all sinful reactions. Whoever hears these narrations attains all good fortune. These narrations are broadcast all over the world and are filled with spiritual power. Those who spread the message of Godhead are certainly the most munificent welfare workers. As someone is Jayadwaita Maharaj was explaining, this verse is from the confidential section of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Rasa Panchajaya, the five chapters dealing with Krishna's most intimate lila. In fact, this verse is from 10th canto, chapter 31, the Gopi Gita. It is known as that. The gopis' feelings of separation, their songs of separation. It is quite significant that in the midst of this most confidential section of Bhagavatam, spoken by Krishna's most confidential devotees, you find this song being sung, glorifying those who distribute the nectar of Krishna consciousness and are performing the most beneficial welfare work. As you were speaking a few days ago, the Sankirtan activity encompasses a great range of possibilities, from the beginnings of I have to do this service to the supreme goal of realizing that the activity of Sankirtan is a very, has the potential to be a very intimate activity for giving the Lord pleasure. Sometimes devotees misunderstand and think that this book distribution is just some kind of book-selling commercial activity, and that when you become an older devotee, you'll move on to more nectarian consciousness and nectarian activities. But here you see that Krishna's most confidential devotees, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has certified that. Ramya kachchit upasana vraja vadu bhagene kalpita. There's no better method of serving Krishna than that demonstrated by the cowherd damsels of Vrindavan. They are saying, and they are giving all credit to those who distribute the glories of the Lord. These narrations are broadcast all over the world and are filled with spiritual power. Those who spread the message of Godhead are certainly the most beneficent welfare workers. Now, this verse is being spoken right after Krishna has left the gopis and they're wandering through the forest imitating his pastimes. Yet, in the midst of such an intimate scene, this statement is there in Srimad Bhagavatam, letting us know that what Srila Prabhupada has given us has such deep potential. We should never look at what our founder Acharya has given us as if it's just the beginning or it's just an introductory course meant for degraded Westerners. I remember Prabhupada in Los Angeles explaining that his books are like an apothec. They have what is required for every type of devotee, from the most neophyte to the most advanced. This is the inconceivable thing about Srila Prabhupada's books. This verse is also spoken by Maharaj Pratyaparudra in the garden, Gundicha garden, after the Rathayatra performance. Maharaj is also speaking, Arjuna Maharaj is speaking about the teamwork of devotees working together, Sankirtan. Maharaj Pratyaparudra was the product of teamwork. The mercy that he received from Mahaprabhu happened in conjunction with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Ramananda Roy. Then Lord Chaitanya finally recognized the king, and all the devotees were beaming with joy. In the beginning, Maharaj Pratyaparudra just had a prayer. He had the prayer of a chance. He wanted to associate with Mahaprabhu. He wanted a darshan. And the devotees dutifully informed Mahaprabhu that this king is a great devotee. He'd like to see you. And of course, Mahaprabhu gave his famous reply, "I don't see kings even in dreams." Later, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he tried. He presented himself before Mahaprabhu with great humility and self-control. He said, "I would like to speak something to you without fear." And Mahaprabhu said, "You may do that. Of course, I will accept it if I want, and I won't if I don't want to." Then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya presented an appeal on behalf of the king. "He's a great devotee. He'd like to see you." And Lord Chaitanya responded very gravely, saying, "This is a poisonous situation you're introducing to me. For me to associate with such a person, even though he may be a devotee, because he's a king, that ruins everything." So If you continue to make such proposals to me, I will leave this place. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya relented. He accepted that this wasn't going to happen. Then while Maharaj Pratyaparuja was in South India, he met Ramananda Roy. And Ramananda Roy had instructions from Mahaprabhu that you should retire from government service and come live with me in Jagannath Puri so we can discuss Krishna Leela in an intimate setting. Carry out those instructions of Mahaprabhu, Ramananda Roy approached the king, who was Pratyaparudra. He said, I would like to retire from government service, give up all political affairs, and then I want to go live with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As soon as Maharaj Pratyaparudra heard Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he became absorbed in ecstasy just by hearing the holy name Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And Mahaprabhu, in order to further Mahaprabhu's service, the king immediately said, you want to retire? You can do that, and I will give you the same salary you have now, even though you're retired. Because you have the fortune of getting Lord Chaitanya's association. I am so unfortunate, I can't do that. But I'll give you all facilities that I can. In other words, let me render service to you so that you can get Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Now what happened when Ramananda Roy went to Jagannath Puri and he came to see Mahaprabhu? He didn't even go see the Jagannath deities. He came directly to Mahaprabhu, and Lord Chaitanya commented about that, and Ramananda Roy replied, the legs go where the heart goes. In other words, my heart is with you, so first I came to see you. So Ramananda Roy presented that. I've retired. Pratyaparudra Maharaj has given me full pension. He facilitated everything. He's actually a very wonderful devotee, and actually I don't even have a drop of love of Krishna that he does. I just have, I know what he has, I just have a tiny bit. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied that, you are the topmost devotee, Ramananda Roy. If you think favorably of this Pratyaparudra king, certainly he will achieve Krishna's mercy. What we're hearing is a teamwork between devotees and the Lord. That is the Sankirtan movement. Just like we had this morning such a wonderful kirtan, Prithu Prabhu had everybody chanting, everyone participated, everyone could feel they were a part, a worthy part of Lord Chaitanya's movement. Whether you're an old devotee, young devotee, man devotee, woman devotee, everyone was participating in spreading the glories of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya was expert at that. And he demonstrated it through the giving of his darshan to Maharaj Pratyaparudra. When Ramananda Roy presented the king, of course, by that time the king had been denied, but still, Lord Chaitanya said, one who is the servant of my devotee, one who is the servant of the devotee of Krishna, he gets the mercy of the Lord. Mahaprabhu quoted several verses from the Shastra, documenting the teamwork of the devotee and the Lord in bestowing mercy upon another devotee. Krishna likes to do it that way. Later, the king went to talk to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, remembering the Lord's previous response to his request to see the king, told the king, I'm sorry, Lord Chaitanya, he refuses to see you. And then King Prataparudra astounded Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya with extraordinary determination. All right. If the Lord is determined not to see me, then I am determined to give up my life. So Prabhupada, in the purports, points out this shows Dridha Vrata, great determination necessary for achieving the mercy of the Lord. This is what Maharaj Prataparudra is exemplifying, that always sticks out in our mind. This is how determined he was to get Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And Prabhupada urges us forward in his purport, saying, yes, if you want to be successful in Krishna consciousness, you must be determined to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Seeing King Prataparudra's determination, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya began to think. He's a brilliant person. He's materially, he was a brilliant scholar in the universe. He began to think. It is natural that when devotees see the determination of another devotee, they begin to think, how can Krishna's service increase? We are also enlivened, for example, hearing the determination of the book distributors. It makes us think, what more can we do to cause the downpour of Lord Chaitanya's mercy to increase? So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya came up with an idea. This will work. He was quite convinced this will work. After the Rath Yatra, the Lord always takes rest in the garden. You take off your king's clothes. Don't dress like a king. You go into the garden when the Lord is resting in ecstasy after dancing in love of Krishna during the Rath Yatra. You go to the garden, and then there you'll get the mercy of Mahaprabhu. This is exactly what King Prataparudra did. When the Lord was resting in the garden after the Rath Yatra, absorbed in transcendental love of Krishna, the king approached him and began to massage him, and while massaging him, recited the Gopi Gita chapter. Gopi's songs of separation, feeling separation from the Lord. The Shastra says that the Lord disappeared from the gopis because they were proud. Actually, the Acharyas point out that this pride was pride in Krishna. So, it was all right. Because these most confidential devotees of Krishna never serve Krishna to get anything for themselves. As Jayadvaita Maharaj is explaining, the innate selfishness of materialistic life. These pastimes in this section of Bhagavatam are difficult to understand because there's not one drop of selfishness there. Krishna's most confidential devotees simply wanted. Krishna arranged that he would leave them. He arranged that these feelings of pride would manifest, and that gave him a chance to heighten the love of Krishna in separation. In other words, Krishna is always thinking, how can I give my devotees more? I was explaining that to one devotee this morning. Even sometimes it can appear that has been an irreversible disaster in the Krishna consciousness movement. Things will never be the same. How can things go on? Or, why did Krishna do this to me? I was speaking at a festival in Russia last year, giving a seminar, and I asked devotees, because we were discussing briefly Krishna's most confidential devotees blaming him, blaming everyone, blaming Providence, why are you taking Krishna away, you're so cruel, blaming the demigods, why haven't you come up with a natural disaster to stop Krishna from going to Mathura? Blaming Nanda Maharaj and the elders of Braj. How can you just stand there and do nothing, letting Krishna go? You think that you're going to be all right, but you're going to suffer too. Don't you know that? And you're helping him go. You're packing the chariots with milk products to take to Kamsa. You're creating your own doom. We see that. You don't. So they were accusing. And of course, they would also accuse Krishna. You start relationships with us, and then you leave us. Now, their accusations to Krishna are pure and selfless. They are simply thinking, Krishna, we can serve you the best, and how can your pleasure be complete without our service? So even in the accusations, the motivation is pure. But we were discussing amongst the devotees at this festival. I asked, how many of you feel that you should blame Krishna for something? Out of 300 persons, 150 raised their hands. Later, Zolanya Bhakti Kirtamaraj told me, if half of them raised their hands, that means there's another 25% who didn't raise their hands. That means 75% out of 100. Mm-hmm. Krishna, why did you do this to me? I was rendering good service to you. I surrendered completely, giving everything. And then such and such happened, or that happened, or that happened. This can seem to happen in every devotee's life. Certainly, who can claim to be anywhere near the status of Krishna's most confidential devotees? A devotee never thinks like that. A devotee is always thinking, I'm so unfortunate, and just like Ramananda Roy, such an intimate associate of the Lord, he's saying, I don't have a pinch of what the king has. And here, Lord Chaitanya refuses to see the king. But when he sees Ramananda Roy, they embrace and fall on the ground in ecstatic love. But Ramananda Roy says, I don't have a pinch of what the king has. And Lord Chaitanya can't even hear the word king. I don't see them in dreams. So even though we're certainly not on such platform, still the fact is, Krishna has more mercy in store for us than we can ever conceive of. That is true for the gopis. By Krishna's leaving them, apparently, he made the possibility for even more intense exchanges for love. And similarly, in our lives as devotees, struggling to carry out Prabhupada's mission, even when there are great reversals and disappointments, the fact is that Krishna has inconceivably more available to us. It's like an insurance policy. You know, you take out an insurance policy and you make the payments every month. So if you've been doing your service, you've been following Krishna's instructions, and then later a problem develops which is out of your control, and it seems like, oh, how can I go on in spiritual life? How can the movement go on after this? Then it's time to cash in your policy, because Krishna will compensate for any discrepancies or great disappointments that have arisen. Because it's Krishna's system that there is teamwork between the devotees and the Lord. So if there's a breakdown somewhere, the Lord personally makes the potencies available so that the devotees can continue to advance. Just like if there's been some disaster, but you paid your insurance, you crashed your car, the insurance company will pay out. Okay, you made your monthly payments, so now we'll give you what you need to get through. We should never think that Krishna is going to leave us in the lurch. He demonstrates that for his most exalted devotees, and he will also demonstrate that even for a neophyte devotee. And once a devotee sees that, you never forget that all your life. I thought I was finished. I thought there's no way I could move forward. I thought there's no way that Krishna consciousness can continue. And then Krishna shows you.
for Krishna to show you, you have to cash in your policy. You have to, just like when you have insurance and there's been a crash, you have to contact the insurance company. You can't just say, oh, well, now what's going to happen? I'll just sit here and wait. No, you take advantage of the mercy that is your due. You depend on Krishna more, even though it seems difficult and impossible. Krishna, why did you do this? And I don't know if I can chant your name anymore. It's a natural personal reaction because bhakti is personal. So we have these personal misunderstandings with Krishna. Why did you let this happen to me when I was serving, surrendering? If still you, so to speak, knock on Krishna's door, help. You'll get more than you ever thought. And Krishna will show you that, just like he's showing Prataparudra Maharaj. The mercy available to Prataparudra Maharaj is that after he gets to this verse in the Gopi Gita, he recites it, Tavakatamritam Taptajivanam. Mahaprabhu embraces the king, as if Mahaprabhu doesn't know it's the king. And Mahaprabhu tells the king, you are the most munificent welfare worker. You are the most munificent welfare worker. Kaviraj Goswami, when presenting this leela, he writes in Bengali in exclamation, just see this mercy. And all the devotees are beaming with joy because the devotee always appreciates when other devotees get Krishna's pleasure. In this way, we can see how King Prataparudra was the recipient of teamwork between the devotees and Lord Chaitanya. In this way, he got such inconceivable mercy. Even in my tiny life, I'm looking at this situation now and I'm seeing who can calculate the mercy of Lord Chaitanya? Here I am sitting next to Holiness Jayadvaita Maharaj, whom 30 years ago, I'm saying this not to embarrass him, but to make a point of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, because this is extraordinary. 30 years ago, I saw him on television and laughed. Who wants to be a Hare Krishna? Regular principles get real. But now, look at this. Now, if that's not Lord Chaitanya's mercy, I don't know what this is the enormous potency that's available in Prabhupada's line. And yes, you all know by now there are other Vaishnavas, there are other Gaudiya Vaishnavas, everyone knows, but what you have seen here is unique. Prabhupada's movement offers the great potential for teamwork, sankirtan, devotees cooperating together for spreading Lord Chaitanya's mission. That is that potential. And it's true, we don't always reach that potential. We'll be honest. Got to be honest in Nukalokadam. Sometimes we fail, but the goal is worth trying for again and again and again. And when it works, you've never seen anything like that in this world when it works. To see the senior leaders interacting together, cooperating together, to see the camaraderie, the togetherness between all the devotees like we saw this morning in Kirtan. That is the unique thing. I don't want to go on beyond time, and Maharaj is expert at being right on the mark, so I'll try to follow in his footsteps.
Just not exactly, but a little addition, because to this interesting story with Maharaj Prataparudra, in combo with Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya, this ploy was developed, that he would see, Lord Chaitanya would see the king in the garden. It's interesting that they both were also the only person who could see during the Rath Yatra that Lord Chaitanya divided himself in so many forms. It was Prajaparudra and Sarvabhauma Acharya. And the reason why it was pointed out, the reason why King Prajaparudra could see it, that he actually achieved some mercy to see that the Lord was dancing on seven kirtan paths, is because he lowered himself from the position of a king sweeping the road. And Lord Chaitanya saw that, the king was sweeping the road, that he became Dasa, 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 the servant of everybody. He took the position of a sweeper, which is the lowest position in India, practically speaking, a bhangi. And he took that position. Lord Chaitanya became so moved that he gave him the mercy, he revealed himself this pastime. It's kind of, I find this so profound, because it shows that the process to come to spiritual realization is a descending process. That Krishna is giving knowledge. Dadami yo tesham satatyuktanam bhajarabhidu. Dadami buddhi yogam tam. I give the understanding by which you can come to me. If one is qualified, and the king became qualified actually just by sweeping the road, that was his. That set off then the whole pastimes are ending with the embracing in the garden of Maharaj Haipo.
I just want briefly, we didn't have a purport today, briefly based on what Prithu Prabhu said, and Prabhupada gives a purport about that. I'll just read 2 seconds. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is so powerful that it acts automatically if a person renders loving service to Krishna. It never goes in vain. It is recorded in a spiritual account, and in due time it will fructify. And then Prabhupada quotes the verse that Jayadvaita Maharaj quoted, Svalpamapyasa Dharmasya Triyate Matobhya. No loss or a diminution in this endeavor.
I have two questions, one to Jayadvaita Maharaj and one to Divamrita Maharaj. If I'm allowed to ask the two, I would be very happy. But we will see if there are others also. Maharaj, you have... sorry, the voice went a little. But you have said... that the root cause of all problems is our forgetfulness of Krishna, and you have very nicely brought the point out, and I'm very thankful to you that you have done this at the to this audience also. And your example is very convincing, that when the son, this is Prabhupada's example, when the son suffers in the street and you know he has a father, then you just need to bring him in contact with his wealthy father, Maharaj. You just need to bring him, that's the situation. Now, sometimes people say this is not enough. Imagine the beggar coming home, he has an impossible relationship with his father, and the father puts him on the distance line. So some devotees feel like this, having come to Krishna consciousness, they are not really, their sufferings have not really been solved. So there seems to be something else also important, not just bring them in the contact. And what would you say to this attempt to disclaim your point?
Yeah, it's true. You know, they only became Krishna conscious, but they didn't become rock musicians, so their life was not successful. Or they only became Krishna conscious and they didn't, well, they didn't become successful in business. So it was a
failure. What?
The problem, if we're feeling some lack, if we're Krishna conscious and we're feeling some lack, then the lack is Krishna consciousness. It's not that something else is missing. I have Krishna consciousness, but only this is missing. If something is missing, it's Krishna consciousness. And that was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's statement. There's no shortage of anything except Krishna consciousness. And that's, therefore, if there's that feeling that something else is lacking, that means faith is also lacking. Shraddha shabde vishvas kari sujidhanishtray. Krishna bhakti koilo sarva karma kritohai. If I just do Krishna consciousness, then I do everything. But if I don't have, that's called faith. That's called shraddha. That if I just chant Hare Krishna, everything will be there. If I just surrender to Krishna, everything will be there. Or if I just give Krishna consciousness, people will get everything. That's called shraddha. And to think otherwise, that's called less shraddha. That Krishna, I need Krishna consciousness plus this, and my life will be sublime. Just chant Hare Krishna and do this, and your life will be sublime. No. Of course, Krishna consciousness means that we don't just chant Hare Krishna. We say, all right, we just chant Hare Krishna. But Krishna consciousness means we chant Hare Krishna, we read Srimad Bhagavatam, we associate with devotees, we serve the deities, we do all of the things that are involved in Krishna consciousness. And it's not simplistic. It's not that a devotee is, you know, just like a happy face, he just chants Hare Krishna. Prabhupada was doing so many things, not just chanting Hare Krishna. But the basis of everything was Hare Krishna, and the purpose of everything was Hare Krishna. It wasn't that Prabhupada was separately thinking, and if we do this, and if we do this, and if we do this. The whole purpose was, just like Varnashram, Prabhupada said, still I have to do this. But Varnashram was not because Varnashram is what the world needs. Varnashram was just for facilitating Hare Krishna. Prabhupada said that was the only reason, is to increase the chanting of Hare Krishna. So that basis, that conviction should be there. That the real need is Krishna consciousness, and if there's a shortage of anything, it's a shortage of that.
Thank you very much. That was a very nice answer. I want to now address Devamrita Maharaj. Maharaj, you spoke very nicely about the need of emotional fulfillment in Krishna consciousness when you gave your class here, and you touched on this again here. Have you thought of something like a step-by-step process how to go into emotional fulfillment in Krishna consciousness? Or let us say, because this is maybe a German need of the nervous German mind, what elements need to be there so that there is an emotional fulfillment in Krishna consciousness?
As I said a few days ago, everyone is looking for emotional fulfillment, not just the German gotcha right now. Everyone in all times and all places has this loving propensity. That's why there is bhakti yoga. Now, before answering your question, I'll start answering your question by reading a bit more from this purport, where Prabhupada writes, devotees of Krishna must persistently seek the favor and mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to become fit to return home back to Godhead. Now, if you're persistently seeking some favor and mercy, that is an emotional, heartfelt endeavor. Also, Prabhupada writes, a student of Krishna consciousness must receive Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. Then his devotional service will quickly succeed. And then he quotes what Pratiparudra was saying. This is the case for King Pratiparudra. One has to be noticed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And a little service with sincere efforts will convince the Lord that one is a proper candidate for returning home back to Godhead. So this determination that let me catch the Lord's attention through service, that is an emotional, personal thing. But we actually have to recognize what are the ingredients of a bhakti endeavor. So we did a, briefly I'll explain, we did a very nice in exercise at the meeting of the Russian National Council. There are 30 leaders from all over the whole country. So the fear was there. I could see it then. Suppose 10 years from now, I'll regret thinking I really wanted to do something else instead of being a temple president. After all, older devotees, after some time, have had their regrets that, oh, I wish I had done something else. So here we are, struggling to be temple presidents, and there's no glory these days in being a temple president. It doesn't help you economically. It doesn't help you in terms of, glorification by the masses of devotees. Why am I doing this? So we had an exercise. Based on what is your heart's desire. Now, these things are actually even being done in the mundane world because business corporations have understood that unless they get the heart of their staff into the mission of the company, the creativity will not really function. So how do you understand what's in your heart? That requires some self-honesty. What do I really want to do? Okay, for example, I can say Sankirtan Ki Jai, Sankirtan Yajna Ki Jai. But in my heart, I'm thinking, oh, I'd really rather do something else. Or how much of this Sankirtan Ki Jai book distribution do I have to do before they let me do what I really want to do? You have to take a look at these things in the heart. And you can tell what's going on by asking yourself, what do I dream about when I start daydreaming? Oh, I can see myself doing this. Or what would I like to do if I had unlimited resources and unlimited possibility? What would I really do? And then, okay, now here's where we differ from the New Ages. And up to this point, the New Ages are saying, great, yeah, right, Maharaj, you're really, you finally become enlightened. Yes, find out what's in your heart, what your real desires are, and follow that dream. No, bhakti yoga means, all right, I have these desires and dreams, my personal aspirations. Why am I sacrificing those things for something else? That's also an emotional process that even though I think I want this or I feel like I want such and such thing, I'm foregoing that for another purpose, higher purpose. Why am I doing that? Then you'll catch the bhakti in action. You wouldn't sacrifice unless you wanted to love and unless you were feeling some reciprocation. So there is the emotional fulfillment going on, but sometimes we don't notice that. It's not an ordinary thing to say, I want to be an artist, but now that I'm temple president, why are you being temple president? Now, of course, you can be doing it or be a Sankirtan devotee out of desire for fame, and naturally you won't last long. But if you can actually see in your heart that you're making this sacrifice because you want to please someone else, isn't that emotional fulfillment? Those are emotional dynamics. So you have to see these things going on in your heart and don't downplay them. I was just doing Sankirtan because they wanted me to. Well, why did you follow what they said? Just like myself. I'll be honest. When I was doing book distribution, from the time I became a new devotee, I hated it. I hated it. Oh, why, Krishna, do I have to do this service? Oh, I want to do something else. I want to be at the press with Maharaj. Eventually that happened. I want to be counting Lakshmi so when the Maha comes off, counting Lakshmi a treasure in the temple so when the Maha comes off the altar, I'm right there. But I'll tell you honestly, simultaneously with me hating it, I was determined to love it. Simultaneously. And that is emotions. I was determined to love it. Why? because I wanted to please someone. I was convinced Prabhupada wanted this. So even though I feel right now that I don't like it, I want to love it. So that is emotion. The New Agers would say, oh, repression, suppression. No, I'm emotionally expressing myself. I'm determined to love this because of pleasing Krishna and the spiritual master. That's emotional expression. So that counts as a heartfelt desire. Yes, Pitcher Prabhu is ready.
It's that's a very nice point. You know, because it's true that the ultimate emotional fulfillment in Krishna consciousness, many times devotees have not have forgone this because they were so attached to their own whatever it was. We have seen sometimes I talk with Ravindra Swarup Prabhu about many of our senior men leaving the Krishna consciousness, falling down. Very big position. They were chanting, they were doing so many things in Krishna, serving, doing so many services to the movement, just ring box or whatever. But some or other, why is it that although they followed so many processes, chanting, hearing, preaching, etc., some or other they didn't come to the emotional fulfillment, or they didn't become purified. In fact, they fell down. And it became obvious that there's one common denominator there, practically speaking, that has accompanied every single fall down in our movement, that they had one thing in common. They were totally impervious to hear from their God brothers. They were totally beyond advice. They were so absorbed in themselves and full of themselves, the birds were singing it from the roof, that everybody could see it, that he was off the wall in his high in his dealings, but he couldn't hear from his God brothers. He was so impervious to it, he was so full of himself, he couldn't hear that what every Maharaj, practically speaking, every one of his God brothers could tell him, hey, listen, you know, cool it, you know, they were not able to hear. The interesting thing is, in this pastime of the Rath Yatra, is that in the end, Lord Chaitanya, when he brings them into the Gundija temple, he shows what the missing part, namely, one has to search one's heart for the anartas. The whole thing, the whole cleansing of the Gundija temple is the search for the anartas, to see where is, and if there's any filth, you know, let me take it out. And if I don't see it, let me ask somebody, do you see it? And you'd be surprised, but the whole world would be able to tell, yes. It's right there. It's visible. Let's take it out. And Lord Chaitanya showed, in other words, that we have to do this. We have to have this. It's not just a process. We also have to do our bit to address our anattas and do something about it. Just like, say as an example, somebody has an anatta that he drinks alcohol. He has to stop doing it and then chant Hare Krishna. But he says, well, let me just depend on the process and due course of time, I will be purified. He has to stop it. Otherwise, he maintains attachments while chanting the holy name, which is the tenth offense. Yesterday, sorry, I made a mistake. I said it's a ninth. I realized later. It was a tenth. It's a tenth offense against the chanting of the holy name. He has to do it. He has to address his anatta and do something about it. And if he doesn't know, well, I tell you frankly, you know, the God brothers know. That's a beautiful thing. And we have God brothers. I'm convinced, and Advaita Swami, I'm sure you agree with it. If the people, the big people in our movement who fell, if they would have approached their God brother in a humble way and said, tell me, how can I improve in my Krishna consciousness? Why is it that there's so many people shooting at me? Because it's not that they were not aware that there was tons of criticism. The answer was, oh, they are envious. They're just envious. It was not, had nothing to do with envy whatsoever. We saw that he was walking into his grave. And there was nothing we could do about it because they were not able to listen. So Maharaj, I want to have this benediction from you. If you see that I'm off the wall, please go and tell me that. And if you don't do it, anybody who sees it, it is so necessary that we have this rectifying agents of our God brothers. they can help us to go down the drain like so many people went, because they were totally unable to listen. They didn't go through the Gundicha temple experience, although they did so many chanting and so much service.
Hare Krishna.
You're off the wall.
I can tell you.
You tell me outside the room. Thank you. I'm ready.
But you know, something that you said raised a thought in my mind about something Devamrita Maharaj had said. You know, you're talking about finding our answers, because Maharaj was saying, you know, that, well, go ahead and look in your heart and see what your desires really are. And as he was saying, I was thinking, no! Or to open up the door and look and see what you're, what's really in your heart. If we take a look at what our desires are, or what, you know, what would we be if we were not trying to be Krishna conscious, we can just thank Krishna that he's ruined our material life. I was thinking, you know, the philosophy that you should just do what's in your heart. Imagine what the world would be if everyone did what was in their heart. The world, you know, I mean, how many people do you, how often do you think about just punching someone in the face?
I know people I would like to murder.
Of course. New York, if all those people were doing what they were thinking about, no woman would be safe. No man would be safe. No child would be safe. No bird would be safe. No, everyone would be doing it. Things couldn't go on for 5 minutes if everybody just, you know, said, all right, whatever's in my heart, I shouldn't repress it, I should just do it. So, human life means control. Human life begins when there's self-control. You say, I want to do that. Then by higher intelligence you say, I'm not going to do that. I got to be out of my mind to do that. I'll chant Hare, even if I feel like doing that, I'll chant Hare Krishna until the feeling goes away. That's... Even if you're not Krishna conscious, if you're a little intelligent, I'll count to 10 or something, anything. But Krishna consciousness is so nice. You chant Hare Krishna, and it all goes away. Down to the, as you were saying, we have to chant in such a way, down to the last grain, and it goes away. A big project. But worth it.
Jayavid Maharaj, there could be a misunderstanding that the only missing point is Krishna in our hearts. So there could be a misunderstanding that we are like we already added, that it's not a simple, simplistic thing. So out of this philosophy there came many misunderstandings in our past in ISKCON. Neglecting others in our own movement, and such things happened. Child abuse, I will not go into the matter. I'm not a guy who is lamenting about this all the time. But there's this Vanarama aspect, caring of each other, and these things are also connected with Krishna. But this is always, this is forgotten if one, especially for young devotees who begin, when it is always repeated like this, then it comes to a point where these things are neglected, caring of each other, and in German it's called Nächstenliebe. We have to care for the others, and Krishna is pleased. Then we cannot go directly to Krishna and want to be we neglect the others. We are and think like this. You know what I mean? I'm not so good in English.
Yeah, no, I got
it. But this misunderstanding could be again like this if we hear this what you said.
Well, that means there's a lack of Krishna consciousness. It means someone is still on the third class platform of devotional service, just me and Krishna.
Yes.
If he comes to the higher platform of Krishna consciousness, then he sees myself, Krishna, the innocent persons, and the demons. The demons I avoid, the innocent people I try to help, and the devotees I try to make friendship with. So it's not that we say, well, you know, I'm just giving all my attention to Krishna, so now I have to do something else. But it's, I have to do that more fully and effectively. And I have to know the process also. Sachinanda Maharaj was talking about the process. So if I know the process of devotional service, Krishna consciousness means I read the books. If I read the books, won't I find these things there? That I have to serve the devotees, that I have to be humble, that I have to be concerned for the welfare of others. What is my Krishna consciousness if I don't see these things? So it's not that, the problem is not too much Krishna consciousness. It's so preoccupied with Krishna that he forgot about everybody else, but it's not enough Krishna consciousness. He never got off the ground. He never got far enough ahead in Krishna consciousness to recognize that all these people are connected with Krishna. That it's not just me and Krishna, it's me and Krishna and all these other people. So again, it's that what you say is right and what I say is right. I never give up, you know. But
I wanted not to oppose you.
Yeah, I understand. We're both, in that sense, we're both saying the same thing. That the problem is an insufficiency of Krishna consciousness. And when there's insufficient appreciation of other devotees, that's a symptom of lack of Krishna consciousness. It means that we were not as advanced as we thought we were.
I'd like to comment just shortly about that. So this process that Jayadvaita Maharaj and Sachinanda Maharaj, they're referring to, that involves emotional expression and emotional fulfillment. It's not that we're simply denying, oh, I'd rather be doing something else. That's not the only thing that's going on. What's also going on is the positive, that for Krishna's pleasure, Prabhupada's pleasure, my spiritual master's pleasure, I'm endeavoring in a different way. Then I'm doing things I normally wouldn't do. That is emotional expression. So the problem comes when we don't recognize it, when we're not putting our hearts even into the preliminary processes of cleansing, the preliminary processes of devotional service in terms of cleaning the heart. If our heart is not into that, and we're just doing that in a haphazard mechanical way while wanting to do something else, then that's where the trouble comes. But if we recognize that even the beginning stages of bhakti are a chance for emotional expression and investing your heart, then things take off. Then the devotional service becomes very lively, because you can't become lively and creative unless your heart's invested into that activity.
It's like the definition of inattention while chanting, that your heart's not in it. or the definition of what Prithu Prabhu was saying, that maintaining material attachment means I'm doing it, but my heart's not in it. My heart is over there with something else. So that's inattention while chanting, or that's maintaining material attachment.
Wait, the microphone is just coming down.
I would like to ask this connection also, since we can see that many devotees who served for many years, they are in difficulties. It might be physically, it might be mentally. So my question is that how much is ISKCON also ready then to help these, especially older devotees, and also how the importance about institutions within ISKCON for helping these devotees, so let's say for example hospitals or even devotees who financial need, that they get economical support and like this, how seriously is ISKCON really taking this to help devotees also on this level, not just in with their Krishna consciousness, but also on this social or on this level.
Interesting you bring that point up, because we do think of these things. In fact, yesterday at lunch, His Holiness Satchinanda Maharaj and Jai Dhuna Maharaj and myself were having a 2-hour discussion about this point. How it can be done, what should be done, what can be done. This is not something that can be solved overnight, but Maharaj here in particular was exhorting us, you have to start somewhere and look and see what resources are available. You can't just, well... So we had a 2-hour discussion about that. I told him how in Los Angeles, you just saw Suvas Prabhu here, he's a veteran temple president, when someone becomes a member, a full-time staff member of New Dwarka, Los Angeles Temple, Suvas Prabhu sits down with him and says, okay, now, he says, let's be frank, you're probably going to last in the ashram not more than 5 years, unless you're a special person. If you are a special person, we are prepared to go the distance with you. If not, that's all right. This is what's going to happen to you while you're here during the next 5 years. If you are Sankirtan devotee, you go to India every other year. If you're not, you go to India maybe every 3 years. If you need dental care, here's where we have our dentist will take care of you. If you need hospitalization, because there's no medical insurance in the States as in Europe, here's where you go for your hospital care. He, as best as he can, he lays out the resources that are available. And also, okay, that's the USA, the so-called land of opulence. Then, in Russia, in the CIS, in Moscow, that's not the land of opulence for everybody, but those who have economic or political power, they're quite wealthy. But actually, I've been told that 85% of all the money in Russia circulates through it's circulating in Moscow. So you'll see great extremes of wealth there. But there's not much basket, what do you call them, these basket programs to catch people. The government doesn't have that kind of thing in place. You know, we're going to help you if there's some material problem. So even though the devotees generally aren't at all well off in the temple, they have made a fund available. So householders contribute to that fund. And if, for example, recently one lady devotee had to have an eye operation in 2 weeks, otherwise she was going to lose her sight. So she went to that fund, and they provided money. And the Maharajas contribute, you know, to it. Everybody has some money, they contribute to it. So that's an example. It's not everything. And certainly what Sauvastrabhu is doing in L.A. is not everything. But there is recognition of the need you're pointing out, and we're trying to do what we can. Obviously, we can always improve our service. But I'm just pointing out to you that there are efforts like that. Probably you have better things here than you could tell us.
If you join ISKCON, you're taking a risk. Because ISKCON is an immature institution. There are institutions that are much better endowed and much more stable. The United States Army. The Catholic Church. Many, many, many other institutions which have been around for several hundred years at least, and which have they have so many things lined up for dealing with these issues. Every community, every social unit has to take responsibility for those who are not independent.